Hello and welcome back to the Attribution Marketing Podcast powered by LeadsRx. On today's episode, we have Mickey Kennedy, and he is the founder and president of eReleases, the small business leader for press release distribution, now in its 25th year. Mickey is absolutely an expert at helping small businesses, medium businesses, and enterprise level businesses increase their visibility and credibility by using the tried and true method of public relations. So Mickey, thank you so much for being on the show. How are you?
I'm well. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. Glad to have you here. So we always start off with just a quick question about your career arc. How did you even get into this position? Tell us about that past 25 years, or even maybe we go back 30 years. How did you even get into this space and walk us through it?
Yeah. So around 27 years ago, I was finishing up a Master's of Fine Arts in creative writing with an emphasis in poetry. And my career plan was to write poetry and wait tables. And so I graduated, I spent a summer waiting tables. And I got to tell you, being on concrete 10, 12 hours a day, it's really exhausting physically. I even think like psychologically, I was breaking down at the end of each shift. And I just realized at the end of that summer, I couldn't do this for the rest of my life. So I decided I wanted a safe office job. And I got hired at a telecom research startup as employee number 3. And they just saw writing on my resume and said, hey, you figure out press releases and send them to the media for us. And we published data, telecom traffic statistics, and you know, I put together charts and stuff and sent it out, and nothing was happening. And I quickly started looking at what journalists were reporting on. And it was stories. Nobody was like publishing just here's data. They wanted to know what the story was behind the data. So I started to peel back the data. And the big things I noticed were anomalies. At the time, there was one Caribbean country that accounted for more telecom traffic to and from the United States than all other Caribbean countries combined. And I looked into it, and it was because that was the center of call centers for the 1-900 industry, which was really popular 26 years ago or so. And I put that together in a press release and sent that out. And boom, we got picked up by like The Economist, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal. I started just peeling back data, asking the other two people who were analysts there, what are some interesting stories about data or things that are going on or trends? And I would put these stories out, and almost every one of them was getting picked up. And I just felt, wow, I'd cracked the code on this. And at the time I was faxing, and after I do a big fax, which took like almost a whole day of hearing that terrible screeching sound in the background, I started getting calls from journalists asking if we could just email them press releases in the future. And that's when a light bulb went off, and I was like, ooh, you know, email press releases. It's a lot easier than programming a fax machine. I mentioned it to my boss and said, I think that there could be a business around emailing press releases. And he's like, ooh, that's a cool idea. And I then spent a little over a year just reaching out to journalists and asking them if I could email them press releases on their beat, what they covered. And almost all of them said yes at the time. There was no media databases being sold and people spamming these guys. They thought that was really cool. And I launched a little over 25 years ago with 10,000 journalists in my database. And I just was matchmaker. I would take a client, write a release, and send it to the journalist. And over time, PR Newswire liked what we were doing and reached out to me and said, hey, is there a way we could work together? And at the time, I was charging my clients $200 or $300. And I just said, I don't think that there's a way that my clients could afford you. You're like $1,600 to move a 600-word press release. And despite that, they liked what we did and wanted to support us. And so now every release that goes out through eReleases gets a national distribution on PR Newswire. And we're basically like a third of the price of going directly to the wire. You still get a lot more additional things than just a national newswire distribution that we offer. But it is an amazing value for small businesses, entrepreneurs, as well as firms. We work with marketing firms and ad agencies and all different types of people. And it's still magical and great. I see really amazing things happening all the time, but I also see a lot of the same mistakes happening again and again. And that's where I get on podcasts and try to educate people that, hey, press releases are a great effective way to get out there, but it's the type of press release that you do. There's a lot of people doing the wrong type of press release.
Awesome. Thank you. And I think you scooped a couple of my questions here, but let's dive in. Tell us about the mistakes, because on my own past in another lifetime, let's say, you really put a lot of time and energy into that release and you hit that send button and you are usually a little bit disappointed that something that you might think is really cool or meaningful gets glossed over or overlooked. So save us all from the mistakes. What is the winning recipe, Mickey?
If you look at press releases that your competitors do, which is why I think a lot of people do, it gives them, okay, I could do something like that. But the thing about it is, if you look around, 95% of the press releases that are out there probably generated no earned media. And that's what we call it when you get an actual article written by a journalist. The goal is to not have the press release replicated on a bunch of websites. That's called syndication. It's not important. Not a lot of people see it. And it's not valuable. What we're looking for is the original article, having that press release turned into something else that's written by a human. And as a result of all these releases that are out there, most of them aren't getting picked up. And there's a commonality. There is the new hire. Nobody really cares that you have a new associate in HR, unless it's a new executive or an industry veteran. Most people don't care. You'd be better off taking that message and sending it to your local paper and maybe a trade publication that has an on-the-move section, because that's usually about the best you can expect from your typical new hire press release. Spending money to send it over the wire is not a good use of your funds or time. The second most common press release that I see is the product launch press release. And in theory, you're right, it should be newsworthy, but most of them consist of, here's a new product, and here's a list of features, and here's a link to find out more and to buy it. And you have to remember, at the end of the day, just like I figured out working at the telegeography all those years ago, is that journalists are looking for a story and something that follows a story arc. And so I went out and found those little stories and brought them to their attention. A product launch with a list of features, there's no story there. It's a product with features. You can take that and turn it into a story. And so one of the things I would do is, what are the stakes for this product? If you have a logistics solution for a particular industry, and let's say you go out there and get some publicly available numbers and data that shows that, I don't know, 32% of companies fail in the first 5 years because they never get their logistics honed in. And by using this product, they can. That shows the stakes, the importance of this. So anchoring a press release with numbers and data is a really great way to introduce it. But even more importantly, to get more of those story elements that a journalist needs, is how about a use case study? I assume you didn't just take this product and throw it into the world and hope that people like it. I'm sure you had people beta test it for you. What were their results? Here's a client. This is what they were experiencing. They use the product. This is the outcome. And here's a quote by them talking about the transformation of using the product. That's more of a story arc. That tells more of a real story that a journalist can incorporate into an article. And so I think that's one of the important things, is recognizing that journalists are natural storytellers. And occasionally they do publish stuff that's not very story driven. But at the end of the day, it is naturally what we gravitate to. And the more elements you can get in there, the better success you can have. The types of releases that I think are meaningful and I see working are anything involving data and numbers. Doesn't have to be your data and numbers. It could be that publicly available data. There's a person that we have that puts together data on a regular basis and creates these beautiful infographics and then does a press release about it. And he gets like so much pickup and so many people linking to that infographic. He ranks like number one for all of his searches. That's what people are looking for. They're looking for a compilation of really interesting stories or data or numbers, things like that, because numbers tell a story. And one of the things that I always advise people who are about to give up on PR, maybe they've tried a couple of releases and nothing happened. Or in the case of one guy who came to me and said, I had a PR firm. I spent $40,000. We got no earned media, zero. And I'm just like, that's crazy. I know that PR firms can't guarantee coverage because it is not easy getting coverage, but man, I would have done a home run for my client if I had taken $40,000 from them. And one of those home runs is a survey or study within your industry. Anybody can do a survey or study. It's just a matter of putting on the hat and claiming yourself as an expert and coming up with 16 interesting questions. That's the formula I follow. I do a SurveyMonkey, 4 questions per page, 4 pages. If someone stops halfway, you've got 8 responses. You probably front loaded the most important questions first. And at the end of the day, you get a link and you send that to people. I know that nobody has usually enough people in their Rolodex to send us a survey like that out, but there are hundreds of trade associations in every industry. A lot of them are small and independent. Those are the ones I would focus on. You're looking for a trade association with, say, 700-800 members or more. Stay away from the large trade associations. They sound great. They have huge numbers, but they won't cooperate with you. And getting approval for something like this, it just isn't worth it. So you go to one of the smaller ones, you approach them and say, hey, I've got this survey I'd like to send to your members. Here's the link. If you could send this to your members, I'd be willing to put you in a press release I'll be issuing over the wire in the coming weeks. Most of the small and independent trade associations get almost zero media attention. It all goes to the large trade association. So many of them will see this as a huge win. More than 2/3 of them say yes from the beginning. Some of them you may have to go back and forth a little bit. Sometimes they might want to insist that you co-brand the survey so that gives them a little more recognition. I don't see a downside to that, but once they've sent it out, you're looking for at least 100 responses. And do make that clear with them that to be statistically relevant, you need at least 100 responses. If it doesn't, they'll usually shoot it out to their social media, maybe pump it out through email again one more time. And then once you've got those results, you just look and say, what were the biggest surprises here? If I was looking at this, what would really be really interesting and intriguing? Because the press release is not going to focus on 16 questions. It's going to focus on usually 1, 2, at most 3 of those questions. And you're going to put that data in the press release, but you're also going to have an amazing quote by you as to why you felt the numbers skewed a particular way, you providing a little analysis as to why 80% of your market believes that environmental concerns aren't really relevant to your industry or whatever the result is. And once you've got all that together, you're going to hit send on that. And generally, people I've coached through this process often get between 8 and 14 earned media articles every time they do a survey or study within their industry. You are going to link to the page on your website where you have all 16 questions and responses, because journalists are a lot more creative than we are. And sometimes they'll go through and find questions and answers that they build a different article or a different approach than what you initially focused on. And that's a win, because they're going to cite you and you're going to get mentioned in an article. So I find that is one thing that takes a little bit of effort, but it really is very little effort. The hardest part's coming up with 16 interesting questions. The easy part is I can produce these in SurveyMonkey in about 15 minutes or less, and generally reaching out to at most 2 trade associations to get them to send it to their members, having one say yes, and then putting it together in a press release. It's not difficult at all. It seems like a lot of work, but it doesn't have to be. And like I said, every time we do it, it's on average 8 to 14. The least we've ever had anybody get is 4. They were in a very shallow vertical, so that might have had something to do with it, but it is a huge win and it works every single time. And it's a great way to establish yourself as authority. I didn't come up with this. I have a client that's been doing this for years, clutch.co. They have a lot of little rankings of different verticals, and they do a survey every year for each of these verticals. They're doing between 20 and 30 surveys a year, 20 to 30 press releases. And almost every single one gets between, like I said, 8 to 14 on average articles, often linking directly to their website. And they used to just be a review and ranking site. And now they really are recognized as being leaders in these industries and verticals because they have such a presence in the survey space. They're just known for their annual survey now.
Super helpful. And thanks for breaking that down for us. Quick follow-up. You touched on a lot of different things, but I want to just dive a little bit deeper into what you have consistently referred to as stories. And I just want to share an anecdote and see what your thoughts are on that. But you watch the nightly news or whatever, and if they give you stats, environmental stats, or the big companies polluting in the river behind your small town, okay, hard to relate to that. But if they tell you about Sally, who lives in the house next to the plant, and there's a personal interest story about how Sally was affected, all of a sudden, it starts to resonate with the human beings. And so my question to you is just about your thoughts on that. And then before you answer, on Twitter, you'll see folks that there's all different types of stuff going on X.com, I guess I should say. But a lot of times from the popular accounts, it's almost exactly what you're saying, which is they give you a teaser in that first tweet, but the story is what comes below. You have to expand the tweet and read the thread, let's say. But I never really noticed it until more recently. And I'm like, all these big accounts, they turn all the knowledge they're trying to share with you into a personal anecdote, or, hey, I have a friend who did this and this. Let me tell you a story about my friend. And so I wanted to just get your response to that abstractly, not really a well-formed question, but is that what you mean by stories? And can you maybe dive in a little bit deeper to define what a good story looks like? Are we following the Hollywood story arc with the protagonist, et cetera, and the conflict resolution and all that stuff? Just dumb it down for everyone. Tell us what the best story looks like, regardless of maybe where that data or industry is coming from.
So I think that almost all stories, whether written, it's a novel or a really satisfying short story or a movie, they do follow a theme where you have a protagonist and they move through an obstacle, and then they overcome something, and then there's this resolution. That's, I think, that the goal of what we're looking for. But when we're businesses sending out releases, it may not look that cut and dry, but putting a human element into it, like being personal with a particular client who had a problem, they used your product, this was the outcome, and here's a quote by them. It does satisfy a lot of that movement of what we see in Hollywood and what has followed the story format over time. I have a feeling this whole story arc goes all the way back to people sitting around fires and telling stories, because it does naturally delight people. And books that sort of deviate from this typical pattern generally don't do as well. They don't sell as well, and they're not as satisfying. There is something satisfying about having people come out the other side and being transformed or better or improved, like in the use case study with a product. They tried the product and now things are much better, and it's a huge win for them. And so I think that is the model that people follow. I also believe at the end of the day that people want to do business with people and not corporate logos and corporate names. They want to do business with individuals. I think that's why almost everyone that appears on Shark Tank, one of the first things they do is they share their story, who they are, what inspired them to create the product or the company. Often it's in sharing an obstacle or a vulnerability. Sometimes it can be inspirational.
Yeah. You know, how do you make them cry?
And I think it's because it really humanizes them, the company and them. It's a human interest element. And that's what tugs at us. That's our emotional reach, is to relate to other humans. And I think that so many people, especially a lot of small businesses, want to appear corporate. And they take the human out. And often I have to beat them up a little bit to try and put the human back in. I had one client that shared a very embarrassing story where they had to cancel Thanksgiving and end up shipping product out, getting them in packages and ready to go out over the weekend of Thanksgiving. And I told them that we should put that in a press release, and they thought I was crazy. And I'm like, no, this really humanizes you. It's something that happened early in your business. You've come out the other side, but I really think it's going to do well. It turned out to be the introduction to the 2-page story that Inc. magazine did about them, just sharing that. And they were just like, I don't know why Inc. focused on that. And I'm like, I do. Every entrepreneur sees the struggles of other entrepreneurs and they identify with it, because there are very few entrepreneurs that did not have obstacles and problems. And we relate to that. And it is a human interest element. And I think that's why that does so well. So one of the first things that I do when I have people go through my ideas for strategic types of releases is, what's your story? Sometimes it can be your unique selling proposition, what you do that's different than everybody else in the marketplace. But sometimes it can be like who you are and how the business came to be, or what your hero journeys looked like so far with your business. And all of those can be really great things to start with. And often you can reuse them in what we call a boilerplate. Every press release usually has an about company section at the end. And if you have a cute or interesting little anecdote or story that maybe you focused once on a press release, now you can take it and condense it down and talk about what your company is, your elevator pitch. And maybe there's room for that little life lesson in there as well.
Okay, fair enough. And thanks for that explanation. Let's shift gears a little bit here. And there's always two camps in marketing, right? You have direct response and you have raising awareness. And I was hoping you could maybe share your opinions on how press releases or creating these stories can have an impact in both of those buckets. And is there a different approach or a different strategy? If you're trying to sell t-shirts on Shopify this week, what would you do versus, hey, you're launching some new brand or product and you need everybody to be made aware of that? What is the difference in strategy, if there is one, or just tackle that any way fit? How do press releases impact direct response versus a raising awareness type strategy?
So I think that a lot of people have always said traditionally PR is great at raising awareness and less so for direct response. And I think the reason for that is it's frustratingly difficult to measure PR. You don't get to use tracking URLs. Even when you put them in the press release, the journalist is going to go to your website and pull the main URL or the main product page and put that in there. Tracking be damned. So that makes it difficult. But that being said, I do think that PR is really good for raising awareness and visibility. But I think there also can be direct sales. It really depends on the announcement and, you know, what the focus is. So if you have a press release that you're doing for your Kickstarter campaign, I think that can be more direct response driven. You're trying to raise visibility Kickstarter campaign in order to get backers. And journalists know that as well. And I think that one of the reasons we see so many Kickstarter campaigns in print is because journalists like to be seen as curators. They very rarely get accolades for covering the latest Office update, Microsoft Office update, but they do get praise when people bring to light a small unknown tool or product or software or solution that nobody knows about. For that reason, journalists are often, they gravitate towards small unknown companies, mom and pops, and things like Kickstarter campaigns where they'll cover something like that. And in those cases, I think that the end result, the article, probably is more direct response written, because it generally is written in a way of bringing this cool product or solution to light. And it usually instills in people a desire to buy. I myself am guilty of seeing on blog posts and webs, news sites that profile a Kickstarter campaign. I'll click through. If it looks affordable, I will immediately back it. Whether I ever get that product eventually or not, who knows? All I know is I had this warm feeling and I wanted to support that backer. Their story, their hero journey was in there, them talking about a solution that no one else has come up with, because nobody does a Kickstarter campaign if you could go to Amazon and find the same product. They just don't. So they've got a niche that they've uncovered and they're trying to get enough people to get in there, support it. There's this excitement and this rapport. And when a journalist writes about you or someone covers you, it is like third-party corroboration or social proof. It's a huge credibility boost, and people click through and buy. I've had people come to me and say, look, we got 300 visitors from this article, and it looks like almost 180 people bought. Is that even possible? And I'm like, it is. If you create a landing page, you're not going to get a better than 50% conversion rate. But in the case of an article, I have to point out a lot more people than 300 people saw the article, most likely. But 300 people felt motivated enough to click through and learn more. And then when they saw your product, it was affordable, it was cool, it wasn't a huge expense, and they just bought. So it is possible to get that. What I find is that my customers get, when they do get sales from earned media, they're often more loyal, the customer's more loyal, and they generally are less likely to price shop in the future or ask for discounts. They're really great customers. And I think it's because of that signal of trust that happens when a journalist writes about you. It's like a sea of trust radius around you. It really is an emotional response and this amplification that happens with earned media that doesn't happen with traditional advertising and landing pages.
Well said, Mickey, and thank you for breaking that down for us. I think last, but certainly not least, how can folks get a hold of you for anybody listening to this that might have overlooked press releases or PR in general? How do they get a hold of you or get a hold of e-releases? Go ahead and, you know, plug yourself. Let us know where we can go to actually add this into our omni-channel marketing campaigns.
Sure. The website's ereleases.com. We do have a special rate that you can find in our footer for PR firms, marketing firms. And I do have a free video masterclass that goes through strategic types of releases, the ones that are much more likely to yield positive results and a media pickup. And that's completely free. It's at ereleases.com/plan, P-L-A-N. And it's a video masterclass. It's less than an hour long. I know people don't have huge attention spans anymore. So I really tried to break it down to the most meaningful types of releases and the quick and dirty of the ones that you should be focusing on. I guarantee that if you do a PR campaign of 6 to 8 releases, which is a proper PR campaign, and you're doing strategic press releases, you should see earned media from at least 2 or 3 of those releases. Sometimes more, sometimes it might be a little bit less, but all you need is one good win to really drive a lot of links, eyeballs, and sales your way.
Thank you very much, Mickey, for being on the show and breaking that all down for us. For anybody listening to this episode, if you want to get a hold of Mickey or try e-releases, go to ereleases.com. We will have some links in the episode description, wherever you're listening to this or watching it. So please go check out what Mickey has done over the past 25 years. He is an absolute expert in the PR space. And don't overlook public relations. It's an important aspect to an omni-channel marketing campaign. And e-releases is a great solution for that. Thank you so much, Mickey, for being on the show. This is the Attribution Marketing Podcast, signing off.